Welcome to Dubs OT, your weekly Warriors podcast on thesportsvirus.com.
Brought to you by TPC Harding Park in San Francisco, home of the 2020 PGA Championship. And Kane's Tire in San Rafael, the lowest prices in Marin for over 60 years. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Whitson and Joe Castellano.
Coming up, we'll talk about the Warriors' 134-131 overtime loss to the Nuggets. But first, I want to tell you about our favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. At TPC Harding Park in San Francisco, not only do you get to play where the pros play, but you also get to play where Warriors play, like Klay Thompson, who hosted a tournament at TPC Harding Park over the summer.
Thompson Family Foundation Golf Tournament, that was so much fun. Shout out to TPC Harding Park for hosting us. I played great too, so that always helps. Just a fun day on the course for a great cause.
Well, Ray, the Warriors are still looking for their first win in the year 2020. They have not won since December the 27th. 10 losses in a row, including the loss on Thursday against the Nuggets, a team that was playing a back-to-back. They had three starters out. The Warriors got off to such a great start. At one point, they led by 19 points, but they still lose in overtime. They just didn't have enough to close them out.
They just don't have the talent, even with the Nuggets missing Gary Harris and Jamal Murray and Paul Millsap. There is still a talent deficit there. I mean, when you have Draymond Green and you have D'Angelo Russell, you've got two All-Stars, so you can be competitive, but they just can't close out games. I mean, they had the Spurs in overtime. They had a 10-point lead on the Clippers in the fourth quarter, but they've just not been able to close the deal. We thought maybe they were getting better at that when they had that four-game winning streak, but it just hasn't happened as the calendar's turned. And, you know, you've got some young guys who are learning what to do in these situations and what not to do. All I can say is they're getting that kind of experience. They're learning how to execute in these situations. They're probably developing a severe hatred of losing. And, oh, by the way, they're back in the bottom spot in the NBA for the most ping pong balls. So I guess that's a win-win-win. You know, I'm reading about how, you know, the Warriors have an affinity for what the 49ers are doing and the culture in that locker room. And, you know, one of the things Steve Kerr said is during that first championship run, and I saw this up close and personal, shaky start in those finals against the Cavaliers. They were the better team, but I think that the spotlight got pretty big for them. These guys hadn't been in that situation before. And what Steve Kerr is counseling the 49ers to do as they go into the NFC Championship game is seek out the veterans who've been there in that situation, guys like Richard Sherman. Well, for the Warriors, you still have guys like Draymond Green on the floor, and I'm sure he's talking to them as best he can, and he's not the guy we've seen the last few years who's going to yell at his teammates, because those are veteran guys that he's on the same level with. He's trying to be a lot more patient, and you saw that post game when he was giving a couple players a hug, and I think it was Lee who had the last shot giving him a hug as well, just trying to encourage him. And that's all you can do at this point. I mean, it is what it is. This is a team that's going to struggle to win 15 games this year. They're going to have their moments. You see spurts of encouragement with guys like Jordan Poole, who's played better the last three games, Eric Paschal coming back, and you know, he's kind of been out of the mix for a while, and that's what you hang your hat on.
Well, I mean, for Green, at least he's still yelling at officials, right? I mean, he got another technical, so he hasn't lost his enthusiasm as far as that. But he is taking some criticism. I mean, of course, what do you, take this with a grain of salt, maybe? Charles Barkley saying that Draymond doesn't talk as much since he's averaging a triple single. I mean, just, you know, ripping him.
Yeah,
so that kind of stuff, I guess you could say that, but he still is the leader of the team. And yeah, it's true. I mean, you have to depend on some of those veterans like Alec Burks. And I think if the Warriors trade him, which I think they will, I think that they're going to miss him a lot, because he does give you those clutch moments. I mean, he's kind of the go-to guy. In fact, at times in the game, Ray, it looked like Steve Kerr, he was calling out plays for Burks rather than D'Angelo Russell. I mean, normally you'd think Russell's your number one guy. There were times, I think it was about 5 or 4 minutes left in the game, Russell wasn't even on the floor.
That's what you call showcasing.
Yeah, exactly.
He's definitely helped his trade value a little bit. He's had a pretty good year. He's got a career high in scoring. He's a guy who's bounced around a lot, has had some injuries. He's going to be some help to some contending teams, so you want to show him off in those situations. It's puzzling to me, too. Steve Kerr was asked about it last night, and he thought, yeah, in retrospect, maybe I could have put Russell in there in the situation where you need that last shot, because Russell's stats in clutch moments are the best on the team. But I think that's what's going on here is the long game. Making sure that Burks gets his spotlight. D'Angelo Russell will have his time, but there's very little percentage right now with a team that's near the bottom. I mean, some might joke on Twitter that's elite tank mode, not to give D'Angelo Russell, the best offensive player, the ball in these situations. But I think probably short term, it's more about giving Burks some run, and he's gotten that, and I do believe he'll be traded within before the deadline in the next few weeks. The long term one is what happens with D'Angelo Russell, because we're hearing that things are heating up with the Timberwolves, that they're really trying to make a run at him. They were disappointed that they didn't get him last year. He's got the friendship with Karl Anthony Towns, and so you're going to see a lot of stories like that in the NBA media about the Timberwolves trying to make a run at Russell. But really, what do they have to make a run at him now, and what incentive do the Warriors have to make a deal right now when they're hard-capped? It's probably better for them to wait until the summertime.
I do think at some point they're going to trade him. Ray, now that I've thought about it a lot and watching him play, I just don't think he fits into Steve Kerr's system. It's really about ball movement, and I watch him going one-on-one, and I think he's a really good offensive player, but a lot of times he doesn't get back defensively. He loses his man defensively, and I think that Kerr, wants to demand that everybody plays both ways. And, I love his three-point shot. I love his scoring ability, but I do see him getting traded at some point. Like you said, you got the cap issue, but at some point I think they're going to make a concerted effort to trade him and try to get some assets.
Well, I've gone back and forth on this. Like I said before, that reasons I can see where you still want to keep him around, because rotationally you could have him fill that spot where Durant was, where at least, when the second team is on the floor, you have a bona fide scorer there, an alternative to Steph Curry, along with Klay Thompson. But the flip side is, and we don't know this really, is how he works alongside of Steph, or how he works alongside of Klay Thompson. And does the defense improve? His defense used to be horrible. It's elevated to not horrible now. There are definitely some lapses there. There's some communication issues, and he hasn't been on the floor all that much, the last couple months anyway. He's had dents and dings that he's been dealing with. And, oh, by the way, that's the same story with Draymond, one of the reasons he's averaging a triple single this year. And, oh, by the way, it's hard to get assists when guys aren't scoring. They're not the offensive force that they were last year, and few teams in NBA history are. So that's my answer to Charles on that. By the way, a teaser, I'm going to say something that I agree with Charles about in a few minutes. So stay tuned for that.
Well, a couple of positives that did come out of the game, maybe three of them. One is that we saw Klay Thompson shooting before the game, and sure, he's been doing that, but to just actually see it on national television, that they had video of Klay, taking jumpers before the game, wearing a uniform, that was really good news. And then to see the way Jordan Poole was able to knock down some threes, he looked a lot more comfortable shooting the ball. And then thirdly for me was Damian Lee. Now that he has a contract, he's got to feel a little more comfortable, and he scored 21 points. He's doing a little bit of everything. He didn't knock down that shot, did not knock it down at the end to win it. He had a pretty good look and came close, but I love his game because he's just adding a little bit of everything.
I love the story too, and it's not just because of the Curry family connection, but he's talked about it, that Seth Curry is an inspiration for him, and there are certainly some parallels in their career. This is a guy who's had to scrap to get where he is and now has an NBA job, and you love to see stories like that, and you love to see players embrace that and seize the opportunity, and he's got a great opportunity this year to make a mark with this team, and then next year be a guy who can come off the bench and provide some punch. And he's definitely got some skills. He can definitely shoot. He's learned how to create and finish at the rim a little bit better. So, I mean, this is what this year is about, right? Seeing which guys you can go forward with. And Damian Lee's one of those guys. They got Marcus Chris back, and I think that was a timing issue that other teams didn't claim him because they're waiting to see what happens with the trade market and free agency. But he's a guy that's intriguing enough that you want to go forward with him. But, yeah, I love the Damian Lee story, and I hope it continues to work out for him and he has a regular job in the NBA and gets himself a bona fide career, because I think he's shown enough, and he definitely has the motivation. And, you know, doesn't hurt to have the family connections either. So there's all of that. And, you know, with the injuries that the Warriors have had, with guys like Russell in and out of the lineup, this is a guy that you want to give a chance. And I think that was part of the reason he got the ball and that play was drawn up for Lee, is you want to give him exposure in those situations, those clutch situations, because they have a longer term plan for him now than they possibly do with D'Angelo Russell. But getting back to Russell real quick, I think it really comes down to what kind of haul can you get? Can you get a better haul in the summertime than you can now? And I think the answer to that is yes.
What'd you think of Poole? I mean, I just thought he looked a lot better. I know that's just one game, yeah, but there have been so many games where he's just been way off the mark on his shots and didn't even look comfortable taking them or even driving to the basket. He seemed to be just more comfortable overall in all aspects of his game in that one on Thursday.
Well, actually, three games now, he's been pretty good. He's certainly a lot better than he was. And, you know, this is another guy that I think is better served coming off the bench now and not starting. Definitely a deer in the headlights moment for him the first half of this season. You could see that. He wasn't comfortable at all. He was just slinging shots from everywhere and sort of mindlessly in a way. I think that, you know, when you're that young and you're a first-round draft choice on a team that's been to five straight NBA finals, even with all the injuries and the lower expectations, you feel like you have to produce right away, and I think they've had to get him calmed down. And, you know, he played himself out of the rotation, and that wasn't going to do him any good as far as development, so he had to go down to Santa Cruz and get minutes. And that seemed to have done the trick, and he's a more confident player now. So we know there's some ability there. Just want to get him to slow the game down a little bit, and, you know, maybe he's a guy, too, who can help you with some punch off the bench next year, because these guys, these low-cost guys, are going to be crucial to this team next year coming off the bench, because it's possible they may have another high salary player that they're going to latch onto. So that's, again, thinking long game, because this first round draft choice, they're not going to give up on him this year. They're going to give him a couple of years to show what he can do. And it's, you just want him to take those steps forward, and hey, he's starting to do that. So I'm glad to see it, because I know it was killing him this first half of the season.
Eric Paschal had some really good moments, too, on Thursday. He hit that shot that looked like it could be the game winner for the Warriors. They ended up allowing the Nuggets to tie it, but he hit that three. And he hasn't really been hitting his threes. And I think, you know, he's gone through about a month stretch where he wasn't playing as well as he did earlier in the season. You know, maybe the dog days, and maybe he was banged up. But he kind of looks like he's getting back to where he was, in my opinion. I love that reverse dunk he had on Plumlee. That was pretty impressive, and just overall looking better, I think.
Yeah, they love to dunk on Plumlees, the Warriors do. Yeah, I don't know why. But he's, you know, a little undersized, but very strong, and he's going to get stronger. He's not a prototype, you know, four or three, but he's a guy who's just a player, you know, and who's been on the big stage with Villanova. And like we said earlier in the year, it's obvious he wasn't overwhelmed, like maybe a Jordan Poole was at first. And, you know, he took the bull by the horns right away, because he saw the opportunity he had. And, again, it's going to be a long-term plan with him. I think he probably hit a wall. Certainly physically he did. And, you know, you're getting into the 30s in the NBA schedule, then, you know, you're getting to the end of a college season. Although the way it goes now, some of these college teams play 40 games. But, you know, there's that, and it's a different type of schedule, because you're sometimes playing back-to-backs or three games in 4 or 5 nights. And that's different than college basketball. And, you know, the style of play that he employs also, you know, makes him susceptible to those dents and dings again. And they pile up. And he probably did hit a wall physically, maybe a little bit mentally, but he definitely seems like a refreshed player now. And I'm very curious to see how he responds to the second half of a long NBA season. But that's another guy that you've got to think that fits in their plans going forward. And again, an inexpensive option for them coming off the bench. And that's where this year of experience is going to be invaluable for all these guys.
Dubs OT continues right after this.
When it's time for new tires, you want the lowest prices and the best service, don't you? Well, Kane's Tire in San Rafael has you covered on both. Kane's has the lowest prices in Marin County, and they provide the warm and welcoming service that you can only receive from a family-run business. And this is a dependable family business that's been around for 61 years. Voted best of Marin for 35 years in a row, Kane's prices beat Costco's prices every time. Kane's Tire, 1531 4th Street in San Rafael. Give him a call at 415-453-2942. That's 415-453-2942 for Kane's Tire.
All right, let's talk about the Brooklyn Nets, because I have a feeling that's where your Charles Barkley comment is going to come in. because I know that there were some comments made by Kyrie Irving about how they needed to add a few players there, and Barkley just blasted him for that. And the main reason I want to talk about the Nets, Ray, is that Kevin Durant actually had a Q&A on Twitter, I believe it was. Yeah, it was Twitter. And he was asked about the five hardest players to guard, and he did not name Steph Curry or Klay Thompson. He said LeBron, Kawhi, Lou Williams, Paul George, and Joel Embiid were the players that he said on there. So there's a little controversy going on in Brooklyn.
Oh, boy. I mean, that's the mother's milk of NBA media, isn't it? You know, all these little side stats. I don't know if Durant expanded on that, but I think a lot of it has to do with who he's usually guarding, right?
Right.
He's not usually guarding Steph Curry.
And that would be a good one. Yeah, he should have said that. Yeah.
Yeah, in the last few years. So people are looking for stuff, right? And as far as Kyrie saying we need more players, well, I mean, I think every NBA player wants to have more firepower if they can get it. Makes their job a little bit easier. I mean, I'm the last person to criticize that, because I loved it when Durant got to the Warriors to help out Steph and Klay and Draymond. So, you know, that's just the way the NBA is. If you can make it happen, if you can financially make it happen under the cap and the tax, every fan and every player would want their front office to do everything they could to put the strongest roster possible on the floor. So as far as that's concerned, no, I don't agree with Charles, actually, you know, as far as ripping Kyrie. But in fact, that wasn't exactly what I was going to agree with Charles.
Yeah, where were you going?
I don't know exactly what he was saying about Kyrie, but that's, you know, I kind of glaze over when I hear that stuff, because it's just talk, right? Just talk, but I understand it's one of the things that's made the NBA so popular, the social media platform and all that. Where I was agreeing with Charles was saying that, and I agree with this, Michael Porter Jr. might be the second best player on the Nuggets, and if they don't play him more, they're not going to go deep into the playoffs. If they're going to make a run at this, and there's some talent there, some serious talent there when they get the full squad, Michael Porter Jr. has to be part of the mix. You saw what he did in, you know, helping lead that comeback from 19 points last night. And he's played really well the last few games when he's gotten the playing time. But that's been the problem. He hasn't gotten on the court enough this year. And I'm going to agree also with Mark Kisla at the Denver Post. He wrote that if this guy isn't on the floor for 20, 25 minutes a game the rest of the year, that's basketball malpractice. I think people forget about this guy, what an incredible prospect he was coming out of high school. You know, McDonald's All-American and all that. I mean, I think a lot of people had him rated as the number one prospect coming out of high school. And then, he had the back problems with the disc, and he had a couple of surgeries, and, you know, had a redshirt season after he was drafted. And I understand they want to bring him along slowly, but they're halfway through the season now. And my goodness, from what I saw last night, the athleticism, the three-point shooting ability, the ability to finish, this guy's on a pogo stick. Good Lord. You know, Jamal Murray's out with the ankle injury, so he's going to get a chance now. And he's shown what he can do. Last three games, he's averaged 17-7, and he's shooting 61% from the floor. And he's over 40% from the year on three-pointers, I believe. So, yeah, it's basketball malpractice if you don't give that guy some run. And if he continues to get that run and continues to develop the way I think he can, watch out for the Nuggets in the West.
Yeah, and he was definitely a big reason why the Nuggets came back and beat the Warriors. Also, Beasley, the way he played, Barton, and Jokic. I mean, they all really played well there.
Yeah, you know, I was just going to say real quick, and, you know, they get some criticism for this because sometimes there are some lapses in focus. But and I just had one there because I had a call on the other line. But, you know, also they were down three very important players for them as well. But, yeah, if they're going to get to the next level, that's another thing that's got to change. They've got to play, you know, play to their level regardless of opponent.
All right, to finish up here, Ray, because we are sports guys, not just NBA guys, I feel it's important to just touch a little bit on this whole Major League Baseball cheating scandal involving the Astros and managers either getting fired or resigning and, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff going on in baseball. And I want to get your thoughts on it because I thought about it a lot this week. It was a crazy week for following that whole situation. And I really think that in addition to, you know, a general manager and a manager getting suspended and then, of course, they got fired, I think that players should get suspended. At first, I didn't know. I mean, how are you going to do that? But I think every offensive player that was on that Astros team should serve some type of suspension. I know that's tough, but there's plenty of minor league players that could step into those jobs that wouldn't be cheating. It's just really been bothering me and sitting in a bad spot in my stomach all week. And even though we're doing an NBA podcast in a couple of months, there's going to be baseball as well on my podcast here on Inside China Basin. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts about it.
Well, it's a pretty deep dive to go after every individual player involved. That takes a lot of investigation. And I don't know if MLB has the will or the bandwidth to do that. And plus, you've got the players' union to deal with. So there is some protection there for these players. It's going to make that very difficult. I understand the premise of what you're trying to say, and in principle, I'd agree with it. But the nuts and bolts make it pretty problematic. I think that, you know, this, like the steroid situation, there were a lot of players who had major league jobs because they were juicing and keeping some minor league players from getting their chance. But, you know, the other thing is a lot of these players that we're talking about are players people pay to see. And that's the financial aspect of as well. You start cleaning house with some of these star players and bring in minor leaguers. You know, people aren't going to pay to see those guys. You know, that's just the cold, hard fact that MLB is going to be looking at. You start doing that and you start alienating the union, that's a whole Pandora's box. It makes it really tough. So you have to go after the people in charge who are overseeing it, who could have put a stop to it. Because, you know, the players are always going to look for every little edge. We know that. That's been more than a century in this game. And sometimes, you know, for all the way back to the Emery board, there's always been something, right? Yeah. And in this case, and I don't agree with people say, well, there's always been cheating, so what? Well, this is a different level. And you got to draw this line somewhere, and this is the line. And, you know, our old buddy Tim Flannery, and I love him, and I know what he's trying to say about, you know, the premise of trying to get an edge and all that. But this takes it to a whole other level that, it makes it unfair unless everybody's doing it. And you know what? We may find out that there are more teams involved. So, you know, my first reaction, I have to say, Joe, this is how petty I am. My first reaction was, oh, sucks for the Dodgers. Oh, well.
Yeah, I think I might have felt that way, too.
But here's the L.A. City Council, and of course politicians always pander to their fan base down there. We know that. About getting MLB to vacate the titles. That's not ever going to happen. And, oh, by the way, you may find out down the road that there may have been some Dodger players involved as well. Maybe not on the team now, but were in the past. And then you start unringing all sorts of bells, and how do you quantify that? It makes it really, really, really difficult. I think a lot of people, I like it better this way, where that trophy hangs like an albatross around the Astros' necks and around the Red Sox necks. Everybody's going to say asterisk, asterisk, asterisk. Well, fine. That's kind of the way the game is sometimes. And a lot of people are going to think it's not legitimate. They're going to think the rings are not legitimate. And if you engage in that sort of chicanery, well, tough. That's what people are going to think about you.
I think, Ray, too, that this kind of bleeds into other sports where if you are a manager or a head coach in another sport, you start to realize that you're responsible for maybe more than you thought. So, I mean, so you've got to police these players because you're going to lose your job if they're doing something like this, cheating. Now, I have every reason to believe that A.J. Hinch knew what was going on. But if somehow you didn't know what was going on, you better make sure you know everything that's going on because it's going to be your job if you got players that are cheating like that. So you're going to have, you know, really good accountability on your team.
Well, the calculus you do is what you can get away with, right? And these guys thought they could get away with something, and it was pretty brazen. And you know, you've got to be more crafty about it than that. It's like Tim Flannery says, you know, we're always looking for cues and signs. That's fine. That's all fair game. But when it's as obvious like this, and it's such a competitive disadvantage, you've got to know that crosses a line. And I agree with you. Managers have to try to hold the players accountable, and players have to police themselves. But this one was pretty obvious. I mean, banging trash cans, are you kidding me? I mean, the cast of Stump could have had all kinds of jobs in Major League Baseball. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know what that's called in poker? I think that's called being a mechanic, right? You're banging the table, right? You know, giving your co-conspirator a cue.
Right.
What cards you have and things like that. It's just so obvious and not very artful. So on top of everything else, yeah, they cheated, but they were just clumsy about it as well. And, yeah, that's going to be the legacy for some of these players. And I don't know about conspiracy theory about wearing buzzers and things like that. You know, I wonder, you know, when Travis Ishikawa hit his walk-off home run in 2014, he threw down his helmet and dodged Jake Peavy, and then he got mobbed. I didn't see him running to the clubhouse to change his shirt. Okay, so that on top of everything else that's going on lends to the suspicion. But I don't know about the buzzer part. That would surprise me. And that, by the way, is another card-playing trick that the casinos busted up years ago. If you saw the movie Casino, they caught guys with buzzers. They took them to the back room and put a hammer to their hands. So, <Right. laughs> yeah, that's old school crap right there. I you know, again, I'd be surprised, not totally, but that would be all-world clumsy to use buzzers and things like that. But then again, as I just explained, these guys were clumsy to begin with.
Yeah. All right, so final Warriors thing here, Ray. Are the Warriors going to get a win here before the end of the month? I mean, they better win one of these upcoming games. We've got Orlando at Portland, Utah and Indiana at home, then at Philly, at Boston. I mean, this is a pretty tough schedule. Ouch. To try to get a win.
Yeah, you know, maybe Orlando, maybe Indiana, I don't know, Portland. Although Orlando's had an interesting week, you know, they've had wins against the Lakers on the road, I believe, but then they got mopped up by the Clippers. But they're in a playoff spot in the East. That kind of took them by surprise because that was a team on the last road trip that I thought the Eastern swing that I thought the Warriors had a chance to get. So you know, I'll say one of them. I couldn't tell you which one. I think they'll get one. All right. And that's being very optimistic.
I hope so. Really do.
Wow. this is depressing.
I know. We're going to start counting the losses here. You know, worst loss, losing streak since or ever, whatever it is. But, Ray, that's crazy. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it, Ray. And you're probably in one of the warmest places in the country. Everywhere else is either freezing or snowing or raining or doing something. So you're lucky to be in Arizona right now.
67 and sunny, baby. I'm getting a drink.
Thanks for listening to the Dubs OT Warriors podcast. Join Joe Castellano and Ray Woodson again next week on thesportsvirus.com.